Welcome from the deep. I am Mike the Finder.
And I am Book of Brett.
And today we're going to be talking about the 2024 film Long Legs. Yeah, we're a little late to this one. But you know what? I don't care. I have a lot of thoughts about Long Legs. And most of them come from a place of having quite a little bit of hype going into this movie. Because I was this had a lot of hype like months before it came out. So
yeah.
Anything with Nicolas Cage that has a bigger budget than like $100,000 usually gets some form of hype behind it.
Yep.
The Retirement Plan didn't, thank God, because that movie, I don't know if you saw that, but good God almighty.
I did not. I've also heard almost nothing about it.
Oh. I don't know if you saw Arcadian. I don't know if you've been like catching up or keeping up with Nicolas Cage's work at all. Within the past couple years?
Not particularly. The last thing I saw him in was Renfield.
Okay, yeah, Renfield. There was also that Willy's Wonderland. That's what it is. Where he fights all the animatronics. Did you see that?
I did not, know.
God damn it. I thought I was having a... I thought I had a co-host that watched movies. That's my bad.
I do watch movies. That's I watched Masters of the Universe recently. I watched Long Legs last night.
Oh, cool. We should talk about that.
Well, let's talk about Long Legs.
Great. What a great idea. I've had hype going into this. What did you know going into this movie? Anything?
I knew Nicolas Cage was in it. I knew it had some kind of like serial killer element to it. And that was about it.
Yeah, the marketing was about
That's what I liked about it, though, is the trailer for Long Legs gave, like, nothing away, which I really, really liked, actually. And speaking of trailers, I don't know which ones played for you, but the trailers that played for me at the theaters were not, like, all just for, like, all what seems like good horror movies coming out, but, like, it seems like they're putting an effort into trailers again.
Well,
am I wrong?
What movie trailers played for you? Do you remember?
Cuckoo looks amazing.
Does, right?
Cuckoo looks fucking phenomenal.
Long Legs and Maxine were like I guess Nosferatu are the four movies that I'm really excited about. And we're really close to Cuckoo coming out. Now Long Legs has come out. Maxine came out. So we're half done with the best horror movies of the year.
A
lot of the stuff that played before the theater or before the movie in my theater were mostly neon movies, because this is a neon movie.
Oh, yeah.
So it was mostly stuff like that. Neon. Neon is the same people that did Infinity Pool. And so they do a lot of, they're like very A24-esque, but they don't hit as much, and they haven't had like that like big.
So they're like movie. Sega to Nintendo.
Kinda, yeah. But they put good shit out. They put good shit out.
Except Infinity Pool.
We both saw this in theaters. Okay. Infinity Pool's great. Fuck you. We both saw this in theaters, and I have actually now seen this twice this week. I saw it on Sunday. I called Brett and I was like, hey, let's do Long Legs for a review, even though we're going to be late on it. Who cares? And then I went and saw it again with the idea of like, we're watching this. So I now have the experience of seeing this, not knowing what's coming, and seeing it, knowing what's coming and how this holds up on a rewatch. So I've got a little bit to say about this. And I hope you do too. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do. Because this is, nothing like what I expected it to be going into it.
Yeah, the trailers and stuff make it seem much more of a like a hardcore horror movie, I think, than it actually is. It seems more like a bit like more of a, I don't know, like whodunit, like forensic-y, detective-y type thing.
Which it does have an element of that to it.
Yeah. So it feels way more like that. So let's just get into this. Do you want to give us a synopsis about Long Legs from 2024?
Yes. Long Legs from 2024 is about a serial killer who is going around and killing entire families. And Lee Harker, autistic poster child of the year, has to figure out who he is and how he's making it happen.
Yeah. Lee Harker is played by Micah Monroe.
Like, they don't say she's autistic in this, but she definitely, like, I don't know if she's, like, just got, like, a savant thing going on. Yeah. But, like, I definitely feel like they tried to make an autistic character, which, to be clear, is not, like, a problem for me. I feel like they really, really tried to put that out there without really commenting on it, which I think is kind of cool, actually, because you've got this character who has kind of the signs of autism, but they just have her as a character without making it like a thing about her character,
right?
Which I thought was pretty cool. I don't care what makes you special.
Yeah,
I don't care.
What makes the just story get the special? Right,
what makes the story special? Yes, exactly. So, I don't care. Yes.
Anyway, let's move on here. Let's jump over to the podcast drive-in. Long Legs from 2024 is rated R. It's an hour and 41 minutes. It has a 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb.
Little long.
And yeah, it's a little long. It's directed by Osgood Perkins. This just says Oz Perkins. That's weird. I believe his full name is Osgood, right?
I only know him as Oz Perkins.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
See, I watch movies.
What other movies has he been in?
Yep.
Yeah, his name is Osgood. Anyway, this is written and directed by Osgood Perkins. Stars Micah Monroe, Nicolas Cage, and Blair Underwood. This is a weird one, man. This is, like we were saying, this had a lot of hype behind it going into this movie for me, especially because this is, like I said, one of the like three or four movies that I was really excited about this year. But the weird thing is like a lot of people, I feel like a lot of people saw this a while back. And so that's why it kind of had a little bit of hype behind it. And then when you look it up, it's like the scariest movie you'll ever see and shit like that. Like,
I don't remember that. Like, is that a thing people were saying?
Yes.
Cause it wasn't scary. I didn't find it to be scary at all.
Australia.
I found it to be... Okay, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
From Australian Broadcasting Corporation, Long Legs, starring Nicolas Cage, has been touted as the scariest film of the decade.
This coming from the country where everything wants to kill you? Okay.
Flickering Myth. Never heard of him, probably for a reason. Long Legs, the scariest film of the decade.
No, absolutely. No, nowhere near the scariest of the decade. And honestly, dude, like, I didn't even find this to be scary.
It's not,
like, it was,
it's not a horror
it
movie.
Was incredibly, it's like a
thriller horror adjacent.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's like if A24 would branch the fuck out for a change.
Hey, they branch out. They make all sorts of shit. Anyway, do you want to tell me your overall thoughts on this movie? I will tell you mine. We'll keep it spoiler free. We will tell you when we are about to start spoiling things, because there is stuff to actually be spoiled in this movie. And I feel like they need to be talked about anyway. So we will let you know and we will give you our overall thoughts now before the spoiler part. So do you want to tell me how you felt about this film?
I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I thought it was an amazing performance by Nicolas Cage. The girl that plays Lee Harker, Micah Monroe, is fantastic as Lee Harker. The cinematography, oh my god, the cinematography, oh my god, the cinematography, oh my god, the cinematography. Major Kubrick vibes in this one. Especially in the, like, when we have the scene of her at the police station, like, first going over, like, all the crime scene photos and everything, major Kubrick vibes in that, major Kubrick vibes throughout this entire thing, but with a modern flavor to it. This is not the scariest movie of the last decade, because it's not a scary movie. I think maybe the bar for scary has been lowered far too much by Marvel. And we don't know what scary is anymore, because this is not a scary movie. But it is one hell of a suspense roller coaster. I mean, you're uncomfortable from beginning to end. Like the every shot is uncomfortable because this is a prime example of knowing the rules of filmmaking so you can break them. We have so many shots in here that go against all the rules of cinematography, and they work for the story because they're breaking those rules. And it's already uncomfortable to watch, but when you know how to read a scene, it makes it even more uncomfortable because you're like, okay, not only do I know something's off in this scene, but something's off with this shot. And so it's like, it's this uncomfortable aspect of, I don't like that it's not fitting, you know, the mold it's supposed to fit. Not that I don't like it, not that they shouldn't be able to do it, but it's just like, it feels off. So it already like sets you off a little bit. And then just like all this tension building, this movie builds tension so well. And there are so many times when I thought like a jump scare was coming because the things I did see about this movie did make it out to be like it was a horror movie. And it's not a horror movie. I think going into it expecting it to be a horror movie is both a disservice and a service to the movie, because there's so many times you're expecting something horror-esque to happen and it never ever does. I mean, there's a little bit of blood in here. But I mean, almost all of it happens off camera, and that's actually the kind of horror I like. I like insinuated violence, not because I don't like watching violence or anything like that. I'm not made to be uncomfortable by in-your-face violence, but there's something so much more artistic about insinuated violence to me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think that for the most part,
well, then you're wrong because it's not everything.
Actually. Well, I think for the most part, this is actually a very well-made movie. I think the plot is the biggest issue for me. I think that everything...
Because it feels like it was ripped right out of a true crime podcast?
Everything but the plot is stellar. You know, on a second watch, I went into it thinking like, okay, I enjoyed this. I thought it was pretty okay the first time around. I did not hate it, but I was not as nearly as impressed as I was hoping I was going to be walking out of that theater the first time. And going into it the second time, I was thinking like, okay, it was all right. Hopefully I will get more out of it this time. I didn't, but that's not necessarily the movie's fault that I was sitting there watching it, knowing what was going to come next, right? But I will say, well, upon a rewatch, when you know what's coming, it just doesn't hit the same. This is a really great movie the first time around. A rewatch is not super, you know, you're not super surprised by what's happening. So it's just, you know, right. I just think that this is a really fun movie to watch along and try to figure out what's going on with it. The end with all of the explanations and stuff like that is something that I enjoyed, but I'm also sort of like, I don't know, not super 100% on board on. So it just brought it down a little bit for me.
Did you like the ending more the second time than the first time?
Yes, but it's okay. Because I will also say this movie I sat with this movie for days after I watched it. Like, it's one of the, I don't know if it was for you, but like after I watched it, I thought about it for like the next day or two after, because it made such an impression on me. And I was like, why? Because it has everything I love, and I wanted to love this movie. And maybe this goes back to what we talk about a lot, where it's like going into movies with no expectations versus low or high. So, you know, that plays a huge part of it, and going into it the second time around, it allowed me to see it a little more level-headed. So
when you say the plot, do you mean like the serial killer true crime vibe, or
the other side?
What are you talking
about
there?
No, that's mostly what I'm aspect. That's mostly what I'm talking about. I don't mind the supernatural stuff. I don't mind it. But crime drama, which is what this ended up being, generally speaking, is not something I'm hyper into. I don't like it in my movies. I don't like it in real life. I don't get super into serial killers in real life like some other horror fans do. It's not my thing. So watching a almost 2-hour crime drama with, you know, some horror elements mixed in, it just wasn't enough to pull me in 100% because it's very slow and, God, is it long? It's only an hour 40 something, but God, does it feel longer than that?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, like, I don't know where you cut out I don't know where you cut out the material and still make it fluid.
Well, because there's a lot of shots they hang on very long.
Yeah,
but it needs to happen in order to get to move that scene along. So I don't know.
Maybe you cut out the, I mean, I guess you could cut out the gas station scene or the convenience store scene, but I mean, that's our first introductory into the broken mind that is
the hardware store
or Mr. Cobble.
You're talking about the hardware store?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hardware store.
That scene is very...
Or as someone who lives in Colorado, what I would call a mountain town general store.
Yeah.
Because it's just a store that, like, we got screwdrivers, we got Tic Tacs.
Yeah. This is also set in the 90s, too, so it's a very, like, 90s home,
so,
like, mom and pop
Brittany
shop.
Brittany and I, when we were watching it, she goes, why does he have a picture of Bill Clinton behind him?
because it's the laziest way possible to let everybody know what year
it is. It's a very subtle. I don't know if it's lazy. I feel like lazy would be.
It's
like,
only lazy because they do it with Nixon later.
Yeah, but it's not a bad way of doing it. But it is like one of those things. It's like, if you're not really paying attention and you're like,
but they never say what year it is. They just
That's what I'm saying. If you don't know what year it is, it does just kind of look like, oh, this guy really likes Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is everybody dressed super, God, I was going to say vintage, but that just
either
makes me feel too
really
old.
Either this guy's really nostalgic or just a really big fan of blowjobs.
No, they do say that a very important thing in the plot happened in like 1976 or something. So if you do some quick math, as far as how old she is, it's kind of easy to figure out, but they know that I don't believe they ever actually just say 1990 blank.
No. And putting Bill Clinton in there is a much better way of doing that because
I don't know. It felt very late. First and second time around for me when I saw it, I was like,
Slick Willy.
That's like what they do in like an SNL sketch to let you know what year it is. Like that's what it felt like to me. Like just very,
so would you,
how do we let them know what year it is without putting numbers on the screen?
I didn't hate it.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't hate it either.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
But I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that overall this is worth going to see in the theater? Because I'll tell you what,
I don't think you're going to miss anything.
It's a very quiet movie, and goddamn it, could I hear every fucking shoe scuffle and all of it. It was maddening.
Brittany ordered, on the topic of this being a quiet movie, Brittany ordered what has come to be probably our favorite food item at the theater we go to, and also the worst item for a movie like this, which was nachos.
Yeah, I love nachos at the theater. When Nicole
nachos
and
at
I
the
saw,
the, and well, and the theater we go to, they actually have really good nachos. But like I was biting into a chip, and I went. Okay, nobody seems to care. And after that, I was breaking them off, and then just so I could put them in my mouth, and just like and just muffled the sound with my own lips and cheeks.
The day that Nicole and I went to go see A Quiet Place Day One, that movie is a lot like that too. And so it was we got nachos, and she was eating them, and she was like. Like it felt like it was like super magnified just because of how quiet that theater was. But no, do you think this is going to the theater worthy? Because it's very expensive, especially these days. So I you know,
my reasoning for going to see this in the movie theater is solely so we can start pushing Marvel movies the fuck out of the movie theaters.
I don't know. I saw Deadpool and Wolverine this weekend too. It was good.
Great. And that one trilogy does not make up for the last 15 years of garbage we've had to be subjected to.
It ties a lot of the X-Men and Deadpool stuff together, though, which was really cool.
Yeah. Well, that again, we could get on a whole thing. No, we could get on, well, we could get on a whole thing with that. But my point is, when we were walking out of the theater, I overheard... Ah, fuck, this has to do with the ending. Remind me of what the dumb bitch at the movie theater said after I got out of the movie, because it ties in directly to this. But I would say go see this in the movie theaters just for what I can only describe as the real world algorithm that we all live in now, because everything's the fucking Matrix. However, you are not going to miss anything by watching this at home. And I would almost argue that this movie
you'll have
would
be a better experience.
Would be a better viewing experience with a good sound system and a good 4K setup.
Yeah, I this is a at-home movie for sure. I think this is, you know, not to shit all over the theatrical experience. Yeah, I love going to the theaters. I go at least once a week for real, because I have that AMC Stubbs pass,
the freedom to do so.
Yeah, and I can see three movies a week if I want to. And you know, I love going to the theater, but this is not a movie I feel like you need to see in the theater. Now, that being said, that does not mean I'm saying don't go watch this movie, because when this hits streaming, I think this is going to affect a lot of people. Let me ask you, what was the main demographic of the people in the theater? Because this movie was packed both times I saw it. Not packed, but like there was quite a few people in it.
So there were a lot of people in the theater I went to.
Interesting.
And here,
let me, we're before, like two before weeks I, out from release from this movie, too.
Before I answer that, let me verify. Would you say the majority of the people in the theater were like at least 10 years younger than us? Like there were a lot of like younger.
I really wasn't paying attention, but I think so.
No, she's far less paranoid and less hyper aware of the people around.
A lot of young people in both showings.
The theater that we went to, there were a lot of people in the theater, and I would say the vast majority of them looked like they were probably at least 10 years younger. There was one group of kids, and I mean kids, that did not look like they had any business being in that movie theater. But maybe times are different. Maybe you don't have to sneak into R-rated movies like we used to have to when you and I were teenagers.
Yeah, theaters are hurting so much. They're just like, please come in. I don't care. Both showings for me, there were several young people, including like a group of like 16, 17-year-olds. We're almost 40, bud. So anyway, yeah, it is weird how many like young people were actually in this movie seeing this. And I don't know why that's weird to me. I guess it's just because the subject matter doesn't feel, this is like a kind of a high-minded, like demonic-esque serial killer horror movie, which I would not,
for basically calling everybody in their 20s and younger stupid.
No, I'm not saying they're stupid. I'm just saying this does not feel like that type of movie. It would have also surprised me to see that demographic in Infinity Pool. Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, this just doesn't seem, this is a very like artistic, high-minded horror movie. Well, horror movie, thriller. And it probably is, now that you say that.
Maybe that demographic is getting sick of watching Marvel movies as you and I are of them being released.
Well, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, there have been a lot of younger, like teenagers, like 15, 16, 17, in a lot of the horror movies I've seen recently, now that I'm thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're just super into horror. I don't know.
I think horror is definitely having a resurgence.
Especially within the last couple of months, it really feels like it's gotten some legs. It was a really slow start to 2024, as far as like good movies. Everyone hated Night Swim, even though it's really fun and shitty. But we liked it because it's shitty and bad. That's right. The problem is that it's shitty and bad, and everybody wanted it to be fun and serious. Anyway, it was a really slow 2024 start. So Maxine and Long Legs and now Cuckoo, and a couple others that I'm actually pretty excited about. We're finally getting some good horror movies, and it's finally like, please go to the theater and watch these horror movies in the theater if you can. But this is not one that I feel like you're missing anything if you don't. So
did you like this more than Maxine?
No. No, I liked Maxine much more.
I enjoyed this.
I walked out of Maxine thinking, they basically made Maxine for me.
Yeah.
Like that was that movie was basically made for I am the target demo for that movie.
No, this this was
we both did see Maxine, by the way. We didn't do a podcast on it. We were gonna try, but it whatever. But we both did see it and I loved it. So
yeah, no, and I felt like Maxine was definitely the weakest of the trilogy. But I mean I liked Maxine. But I feel like this was much more up my alley.
Oh, for sure. For sure. To be clear, that is why I wanted you to go see this. Because when Nicole and I saw this on Sunday, she hated it. Because it was slow and a slew of other stuff. She's not big into horror movies anyway and gore and all that shit. So
yeah, no, that's fair.
She just did not like it at all. But when we saw it Sunday, I was sitting there thinking, like, I don't care how far behind we are on all these videos and podcasts. Brett would fucking like this probably because this feels like this is a Brett movie.
This was one of my favorite movies of 2024 so far.
Wow.
But again, like you gotta understand, I just DP'd a movie on Saturday. So I'm still in that like filmmaking mindset. And so when I went in this, when I saw that, not the opening shot, but when I saw that shot, when we first see Longlegs, and it's from here down.
Yeah.
When I saw that, I went, I'm in love with this.
Yeah. For me, the moment was the credits with all of the flashing, insane artwork and stuff that later ends up being in his bedroom. And just it's small little flashes of and the murders and all that stuff. It's just these little pieces of Longlegs that you don't know the context of until you've seen it already. And you go back and watch it. It's all the little pieces like the posters in his room and his victims and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's very, very cool. And the red square and the way the red square slowly moves out so we get the aspect ratio of a regular movie from the square at the beginning of The Shining.
That's what I was going to say is the transition from the 1x1 frame to the 16x9 frame is
it's great.
Magnificent.
Yeah, it's great. And they do it again later while she's laying on the bed with her memory when she gets knocked out. She's remembering all this stuff and it's in that same resolution or in that same aspect ratio. And it slowly comes out as she wakes up and it's just beautiful and smart. And everything I love about witty, smart, avant-garde style like horror and thrillers and shit. It's the perfect example of all of that stuff. It's just the crime drama shit that I just can't hold it against it, and I understand why some people would love it, but I gotta tell you, those kids that were in that theater, I heard them talking. They didn't love it because they went into it thinking it was a horror movie, because everything about like the marketing on this movie is it seems like it's a fucking horror movie.
Well, it depends on how you want to define horror. Because if you want to define horror as unnerving, scary, and uncomfortable, it is a horror movie. If you want to describe it as violent, in-your-face scary, then no, it's not a horror movie. I think this is a really, really good example of how the genre of horror can be very, very subjective.
Well, let me bring this down a little bit. Yeah, if we look at I just wanted to flip through some of these posters for this movie. Dude, all of this is screaming like a horror movie, you know?
By the way, the color grade on this?
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's great. It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
So good.
I said, the technical side of things, it's all flawless. Like up and down. That fucking shot when she, speaking of her waking up, when she wakes up and her fucking world is flipped upside down literally with the camera and she's walking on the ceiling through his area. It's dude, it's just so fucking well done. And that is right behind the aspect ratio shift that I was talking about as she's waking up. And it's just this one long scene of her walking through his room and it's beautiful. It's fucking beautiful. And then the music on top of it, dude. Oh my God. Oh my God.
No, everything about this movie is so well done. except the pacing in a couple, you know, in certain areas. Other than that,
I think the pacing's really good. It's just a little too long.
That's what I'm saying. The pacing in certain areas, because there's certain areas where it's like, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's not the pacing. Maybe it's just the length.
I think it's just the length, and it feels, and I think because, we'll start talking spoilers now. So if you're looking for, we both obviously suggest watching this. You loved it a lot more than I did.
I love this movie.
But if you like thriller, crime, drama, horror stuff, you're gonna enjoy this, especially if you lean more into the art house avant-garde stuff. This is definitely worth checking out. And Neon, I've been saying this for a couple months now, but Neon is really doing a lot of really good work lately. So we both highly suggest this.
You don't even have to get out of your own ass for this one.
What does that mean?
You can stay up your own ass and still enjoy this. You can be an uppity little prick like this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, I keep forgetting it's reversed. This guy.
So we're going to get into spoilers from here on out, just because I think that's where we're at. We both suggest this movie, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, back to my point. I think that the reason the pacing feels weird is because Longlegs gets caught so early. And then from there on, you're kind of anticipating it being close to the end anyway. And then a whole nother act almost goes by. So it's the reason the pacing feels weird and too long is because of that. But I also love that about it. So it's hard for me to kind of shit all over it being so long, because I actually think the pacing is really good. The length is just, I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to deal with.
I don't think there's like a ton we can really spoil here. Except for maybe the end of the second act or part, which I thought that was kind of cool. Like it is a little bit shoehorned in about when each act is starting and ending, or not shoehorned. It's very blatant. They make it very blatant because they've split it up into parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the spoilers don't really, like, there's not like a lot to really spoil, especially if you watch any of the trailers, until like the third act. Or end of the second act, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole plot point is like, because the whole plot relies on like, how is Longlegs doing this? And, you know, and we know how he's doing it. And if you have not watched through the movie, you don't. So it's the whole entire point of the movie is what we're talking about, which is why this is spoiler heavy territory right here.
Right.
So,
first spoiler is his name's Gale.
Gale Cobble.
Gale Cobble, which is, I think, maybe why he started Gale.
When I hear that name. Is that Always Sunny? Is that what that's from? What is that from?
I don't know.
Male Gale.
I don't know. But I heard that name and I went, well, no wonder why he's murdering people. Like, his parents named him Gale. Like, that's got, like, childhood trauma written all over it. But anyway, no, in all seriousness, I did not expect him to basically be written off so quickly.
Yeah, they move on so fucking fast from like, okay, and now this.
Yeah. I do like that it doesn't ever go into courtroom territory.
Yeah,
I think that
I just don't like his death. I think his death doesn't. It just doesn't feel like. I feel like they would have had a better death scene if he had like tried to attack her or something. I just don't like that he just smashes his face on the desk till he dies. It just feels anticlimactic. Like it just didn't do a whole lot for me.
I think the lack of time we get to spend with him almost does a disservice to Nicolas Cage, because I feel Nicolas Cage could have flexed like a motherfucker with this character.
Yeah.
I really don't think we really got to see.
The shit that he says while he is handcuffed to that table is just a small little glimpse of what he could do with that character.
Yeah.
And now we'll never know. I guess we could make we could see a prequel, but like, you're right. He could go crazy with it. And we don't spend enough time with him to really make his death feel important enough. considering right. the fucking movie is named after him.
Right.
I think that's the biggest issue. Yeah.
I would have liked to.
But I love the twist. I do like the twist, just to be clear.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I like the twist. I like the way the ending goes. I like the way I even like the way it plays out from there, because like after his death, like I looked at my phone and I went, how are we going to get another half hour out of this?
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't make any sense. And then we do get another half hour out of it, and it actually ends up playing out pretty well. But I feel like even though we've been saying that it felt like it was a little too long, I feel like if you would have given me another half hour of Nicolas Cage's long legs, I would have been completely okay with that.
Well, I think the reason it feels so long is because of that pacing issue we were talking about with him getting killed off so early. Yeah, if you made this like 2 hours and 15 minutes and spent another, you know, 15 or 20 minutes just with him and seeing his process, maybe seeing how he got in the door with the mom, like all of that stuff. If we were actually shown any of that stuff, I think I would have had a better time with the ending, because there's this big gap that you don't get to see of how he goes from standing on that fucking front yard to living in her fucking basement. There, that is a large amount of time. We have no idea what happened in that time frame. They show us glimpses of what she was doing.
Well, no, but we do learn like why he's there. Because he's made, because now they're working together.
Right. But there's a big chunk of time missing from the time he's standing on that front yard, the first time he shows up in their presence, right, to him living in her fucking basement. So that's the stuff that I would like to see if we're adding another 30 or 45 minutes onto this thing. Like, that's the stuff I would love to see. Just go into him as a character a little bit more to give his death more significance. And then once the twist happens, it makes way more sense of why she's doing what she's doing. And I don't have to just accept that we'll spoil the twist here. So anybody that doesn't want to hear that, tune out. You sort of have to just accept that her mom accepted long legs into her life because she was begging for Lee to not be taken and killed and all that stuff. So I just want to see the process of, like I said, that entire process of him getting in with her, them doing all of these murders, all this stuff that it just lacks this. It needs more plot is what it needs, I think. And it just doesn't have enough of it in there to give his death enough significance to carry the twist all the way to the end and have it really hit hard for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. But other than that, I would say I do the ending, the ending to me. And when I say the ending, I mean like this last, like main scene that we get over at the captain's house is,
by the way, it's phenomenal. So it's so obvious they're setting that up on a rewatch. Like,
is it?
It's okay. So fucking obvious how they're setting everything up to get to that end scene. You just don't know it the first time around.
Well, so, dude, like even something as small as like when she's in there talking with her mom and you hear him killing this lady in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
You hear it. And it's just so un-fucking comfortable. And dude, my absolute favorite thing about the ending to this movie is that we find out that her mom hasn't been her mom for a long time, and it's just done in passing.
Yeah.
It's just done. All she says is, "Don't call me mom." And dude, just that one line reveals so much. It reveals so much in that one line, and I was fucking blown away by that part.
Can you tell me, or I'll tell you why that falls flat for me, is because of Micah Monroe playing this character so flat. All of the big emotional moments don't hit quite the way I think they could if she was a little bit more emotionally mature.
I stopped being invested.
I get why it's like that, but that's the thing that makes that whole thing not hit as hard as it could, I think.
I was not emotionally invested in Lee Harker from probably the very onset.
Right. You don't find that to be a problem, though?
I mean, it's a problem, but it didn't ruin anything for me, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's a problem from the aspect of, like, the language of film, but there's so much other shit to get invested in. I was so invested in Nicolas Cage from the very beginning that everybody else is a side character to me. That was kind of like evolving around his own gravity. That's kind of how I felt about this. And so what happened was I started getting really invested in, honestly, probably all the people I should not be invested in. Like, I was really invested in her mom. When you finally meet, like you sense, even through the phone calls, you sense something's off. But that's what I'm saying, yeah. Man, is like that's such a good sign of how well this movie is constructed.
Well, and that gives you outside of the characters. You immediately understand why she is the way she is the second she talks to her mom on the phone. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's just a great way to show why she is the way she is without just spelling it out. And you can just tell that weird, like almost emotionless connection she has with her mom, the way they speak to each other and everything else. That carries over into Lee's entire life because that's just who she is as a character. I just think that if she was a little bit more emotionally mature, that the big scenes where she finds out shocking information and should be shocked by it would hit a little bit harder. But I also understand that wouldn't fit the tone of this film nearly as much as her being very flat and monotone and emotionally stunted and unavailable. So, you know, all of that stuff, I understand why it is the way it is. I just, you know, when I see stuff like that, I just feel like, you know, I'm in the middle. You were talking about you just shot a thing. I'm in the middle of writing this thing right now. And and it's all of this is the kind of shit that I'm trying to think about while I'm writing it.
Right.
And so it's like as I watched this movie last night again for the second time, I was able to focus on the plot and the writing and the characters and all of that stuff. And none of it is very deep. All of it is very surface level. But I also I'm not sure that's a problem for this movie. It just doesn't feel like enough of a hurdle for me to hate it. So I don't know. Does that all make sense? Because like the writing is very strange and definitely on purpose. And her character is very dry and shit. So I can see this not being everyone's cup of tea, as it were.
Do we ever find out why he calls himself Long Legs? No.
And that was one of the things Nicole was just like, why is he calling himself Long Legs? What the fuck? should we Google it?
Hang on. Yeah, while you're doing that, Brittany, were you trying to say something?
I know.
Why?
Because he always has to get down to their level, and that's why all the beginning shots when he's talking to the kids, it's showing this down
from the kids' perspective. Did you hear that?
So I actually just read this on Reddit as she said that.
You're right. Apparently he's reading something about it right now.
It's like when he's talking to little kids, you can't see him in frame. It's because he has to bend down to talk to them. He says, I have my long legs on today. I'm sorry. So it's from a kid's perspective, I guess he's tall, which I guess that makes sense. Okay, here's somebody. Heavily spoilers. This is a stretch, but I was thinking it's because the killer sees himself as Ball or he is actually Ball. One of the rulers of the Nine Circles of Hell. Bale? Is it Ball?
It's Bale.
It's Bale. Bale, the demon that once ruled hell, is described as having ashen altar look for him. Or carrying ash and having a hoarse, peculiar voice. His form was inconsistent, having different faces and heads, but he is depicted as having the body and legs of a spider. In some interpretations, people would sacrifice children to him. He granted wisdom, control over men, and powers such as invisibility. Ball eventually gave up the throne in hell to Satan, taking on the role of prince. He became Satan's subject, so while Ball has some independence, he would not have the power to harm anything created or protected by Satan.
People also believe this shit?
Could also be Satan himself, the man downstairs, who is usually depicted as a serpent. There's also a lot of serpent imagery that flashes upon screen at key moments of the film.
Yeah.
So when he has his, quote, long legs on in a mortal form, he's unrecognizable, basically making this character the utmost evil in the world, which he proves throughout the film. He makes the protectors of the family become the annihilators through the most pure family member, the daughters, which is perversing, which is perversing the whole dichotomy of the good Christian Catholic household thing, which is what Satan wants to do when it comes down to anything holy or righteous. In other words, blasphemy. I like that. That's a pretty good take on it.
That was, wow, that's a lot of thought put into that.
It is a lot of thought put into that. But this is one of those things that I don't know if it's a lot of thought put into it or if we just don't know a lot about specific demons.
Well,
I know some of the stuff from Diablo, other than that, you know what I mean?
No, that's fair. But
I'm not super familiar with that lore.
I said it out loud, and as you're reading that, I'm going, people believe in this? Like
actual nine circles of hell and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I like the idea of it being like him being an actual demon personified as a human being that's weird and peculiar looking. But I also think that's, I don't know if... Maybe it's just me and it's because I watch too many horror movies. I'm getting tired of, the bad guy was Satan. that seems to happen often, like almost too often where it's like just...
Like what were the recent ones?
Off the top of my head, Immaculate, The Pope's Exorcist.
that's a Catholic movie.
I know, I guess. And Immaculate is too. But it's just, I don't know. I've just seen a lot of it recently is what it is. And it just feels like that.
See, I don't have a problem with that. So, but like we said before, supernatural horror is like my favorite.
Right.
Realm,
which is why I knew you'd like this because it
weird,
just teases it in this film. And you know, the black smoke that comes off her head whenever the doll is killed.
Ooh. Ooh.
Go ahead.
Can we tie this in to what I said about the dumb bitch coming out of the theater?
Please. I was thinking we were probably going to forget that.
I heard someone we walked out of the theater, Brittany goes to the bathroom, and somebody that was in there comes out and she goes, I don't understand how the balls kill them. And all I could think was, just go watch an Avengers movie. Just go watch the Avengers. It clearly makes more sense to you. It's easier to comprehend for you. Where do the balls kill them? Did you watch the same movie? Fuck! And it's, God.
Well, all right. Do you want to get into final thoughts and ratings on this movie?
Yes.
I think we touched on everything I kind of wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of substance to like pick apart as far as like interpretations and stuff like that go. So it's, it's fairly straightforward.
The artistry and the mastery of this movie really comes in with the, cinematography, Nicolas Cage's performance, the use of tension in this movie is masterfully done. It really, really is. It's incredibly uncomfortable from
beginning to end. Did you notice all the sub bass in this movie, by the way? There's a ton of sub bass in this movie.
I did
like
not.
Like super hyper low end, no sound other than sub. You didn't notice
that?
No, I did not. Okay.
Right. But overall, I loved this movie. Like I really did. This movie's also right up my alley. It's got tension. It's a thriller. It's got a supernatural aspect to it. And honestly, I think this is a perfect role for Nicolas Cage. I would love to see him playing more crazies in thrillers and horror movies.
He's
did
done
great
a lot.
Renfield.
I know.
I just, but this, like to this level,
I made you watch, we never did the podcast, I don't think, on it, but the Buffalo movie, what the fuck was that called?
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck was that called? The guy with the tiny little arms?
Yeah.
Fuck, what is that
movie? Strong Hand.
Buffalo Crossing? something Crossing?
Something like that. Miller's Crossing? No, Miller's Crossing is a Coen Brothers movie.
Butcher's Crossing. Butcher's Crossing. He's great in that because of that very reason that you're talking about.
Yeah, he's great at playing crazy people.
Yeah.
Because he's a fucking psycho in real life.
Yeah. Have you seen the way he dresses?
I've seen the way he dresses
like a real life vampire.
I saw an interview. I saw an interview with him. I can't remember what movie it was for, but
he dresses what a 9-year-old thinks a vampire would dress like. That's the way he dresses.
Sometimes he dresses like Liberace as a biker gang member. Either way, he's a fucking crazy person in real life, but you know, I would imagine anybody brought up in any branch of the Coppola family is probably a little bit broken.
But that's what makes him fantastic.
Right.
It's what gives him the charm that he has and the ability to be in all of these movies the way he is. When you go back, even look at some of his, like, what is that vampire movie from when he was like 19? Vampire, what the fuck was that called?
I don't.
Vampire Kiss. Have you seen that?
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. No, I have.
You'll
not
know
seen
the screenshot immediately.
No, I know. Yeah. No, I know.
You need to watch that movie. You go back all the way into the 80s, he was acting this way. So it's not something that he puts on for a show. This is the way he is.
He's insane, dude. Yeah.
And it's amazing.
If he only did psychotic characters, like mentally tweaked characters all the time, I already will go watch anything he's in. I'm not gonna like go out of my way to do it because like I didn't watch what was the one you brought up earlier? Retirement Plan. I didn't watch Retirement Plan.
Is so terrible. But Ernie Hudson's in that too. It's really bad.
The whole reason I watched Renfield is because it was like, dude, Nicolas Cage is Dracula. Fuck yeah, I'm in.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely in.
And he killed it. By the way, he's great. He's great as Dracula.
I bought it on 4K because of him.
Did you? I didn't pick that one up, but I probably should.
Oh, I'll be buying Long Legs in 4K as well.
I probably will buy Long Legs.
With that said, highly, highly recommend seeing Long Legs. Go see it in theaters so that we can start showing these studios. We don't all want to see the same superhero bullshit over and over and over again. I saw Kate Blanchett is going to be in one, and I went, what the fuck? It's like, you throw enough money at these people, and they're like, yeah, I'm on board.
Why wouldn't you want a piece of that if you could get, like, I don't know.
Integrity? What do I know? I shoot real estate photography for a living, so what the fuck do I know? Yeah. Shut the fuck up. But
here, let me make you an offer. Do you want to be in this shitty TV show or make millions of dollars pretending to be a superhero?
Are they both shitty the way you describe them, or is one shitty in the sense of it won't be popular?
Does it matter?
It does, because even if it's good, it can lead to more stuff down the road.
Okay.
A superhero movie could bring your career to a standstill.
My point is if somebody offered you millions of dollars to play Superman or whatever, you'd say yes. That's my point.
People could offer me millions of dollars to get up the ass, and I'd probably do it, but I have no integrity.
Exactly.
in all seriousness, go see Long Legs.
What's your rating?
I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay. I thought you were going to go higher than that.
No, I'll give it an 8 out of 10. It's got its issues. If I could give 8.5, I would, but I can't. Okay. I feel like 9 out of 10 is a little too close to perfect.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, this is just not quite up my alley the way it is for you. I think that it's been a long time since I've seen a crime drama that has piqued my interest this hard, though. The fact that I was willing to go sit through this movie a second time is a testament, regardless of how I felt about it the second time around, it is a testament to the filmmaking. And this is just genuinely a fucking amazingly made, well-made film. It just is. It's up and down. You can feel the way you want about the characters and the plot and the story and whatever. But technically speaking, this is an insanely good movie. Mm-hmm. Now, when I think about story and plot and significance and all of that stuff, that's where all of that kind of that stuff kind of falls apart for me.
Right. That's why I gave it an 8 out of 10.
But that's not to say that this isn't a great movie, because it is. It's just not nearly my cup of tea, nearly as much as it is for you. So for me, the first time I saw this, I rated this a 6. I then about an hour later bumped it up to a 7 on Letterboxd. The second time around, I came out as a 6, though. So I'm gonna give Long Legs a 6. This is
Who the fuck do you think you are?
I've seen a lot of people on both sides of the fences being like, "This sucked ass," or "This is great." I have not seen a lot of people just kind of say the way I feel about it, where it's like, "Yeah, it's pretty good. It's not amazing, but it's pretty damn good, and it hits more than it misses, and it's." It's decent. So, I think a six
turn
is
into Book
is
of
good
Brett while I'll be picking up back on my solo podcasting.
Prove it.
Ha. we all know that's not going to happen.
So, all right. Well, do you have anything else to say about this?
No, dude. I loved this movie. I loved almost everything about it. If we were rating this just on cinematography alone, 10 out of 10 without question.
Yeah.
But we're not. So it's an 8 out of 10. Mike's wrong, so it's an 8 out of 10. And it's going to remain at an 8 out of 10. And, you know, go find him on Letterboxd and hassle him.
That's fine.
Go through his catalog.
What does that mean?
let's start a GoFundMe. We'll just start a hashtag, just troll Mike, where everybody just trolls your Letterboxd.
Hey, if it gets more people on my Letterboxd, whatever. I'm still not convinced that everybody that uses Letterboxd other than me isn't a bot, because, like, holy fuck.
Amen to that.
Fucking too much. Okay, so anyway, if you like this, make sure you hit the like button. If you really liked it, make sure you hit the subscribe button, because we got a lot more content like this on the channel, including more coming in the future. Yeah, we haven't been around very much the last month or so. This is Brett's hyper busy season, and it's hard to get the two of us together to do this for long periods of time. But, you know, when it's a movie we really, really want to talk about, we'll get to it. I know we didn't do Maxine, and we said we were going to. When Maxine comes around to streaming, I think that's probably when we'll do Maxine. We both have seen it already, though. And like I said earlier, I already told you how I felt about it. So we will get around to Maxine. I know there's probably people going, why the hell haven't you done that? You've done the other two. You both really liked them. What the fuck? We will get to it. But for now, we got some plans to do some other stuff in the meantime. And thank you for anybody that has been sticking around, even though we haven't been posting. So we really, really fucking appreciate it, for real. So anything else?
No.
All right.
Just don't leave me. I'm so lonely.
All right. So thanks for watching. We'll see you guys next time.
Not you, them. Ta-ta!